Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 287 shopping days left until Christmas, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this podcast. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Hello.
Hello, John. And Mr. Bradford has absconded with our regularly scheduled podcast material. He's not with us this week. We found ourselves a ringer, and also Karen Five is back on the show to help us discuss it. Karen, what's happening? How you doing?
Oh, I'm pretty good. How are you?
I cannot complain. I'm gonna take it back. I can complain, and I'm going to complain.
There's going to be so much complaining.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're really gonna step in it this week.
Probably.
We wanted to do an episode last week to commemorate Mardi Gras, but one of us had to go on vacation, and that one of us was me, and I apologize.
How rude.
I know, right? So, yeah, we're in, I guess, the Lenten season now. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think so.
The Lenten season. So we figured now is the time. Four or five years into this project, we haven't really discussed a truly, like, religious movie on the podcast, and it seemed like as good a time as any to step into that puddle of controversy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that we're not counting Christmas Shoes as very religious, because it wasn't really religious as much as it was sanctimonious.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
It starred fucking Rob Lowe, for God's sake, right? Like, which...
I mean... I mean, yeah, Christmas Shoes is its own special brand of terrible.
Yeah.
And I want to start out the show by saying, like, we are not looking to pick a fight with this show, and we're going to try to be reasonably, as far as we go, reasonably, what's the word?
I will try to be fair.
Fair is a good word. Uncombative, I was gonna say.
That's a bridge too far.
Like,
I'm sorry, I thought you knew me.
Okay, well, I guess I'm gonna have to be the one to keep things on track this evening.
You can be our mediator.
I'll be the mediator. Sure. I'll be the defender of truth and virtue and all that fun crap. Yeah. Just call me Orlando Bloom, because I'm going on a crusade.
I was going to say, you can be a crusader for Christ.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, see, for real and for true, we're not here to pick a fight with the religious crowd. We're picking a fight this week with this really silly, dumb movie called The Star.
Yeah, hey, religious crowd, you want us to not make fun of your movies? Make your movies better. It's a simple transaction.
This movie upset me.
I feel like I'm belaboring the point. We're not really here to pick a fight with the religious crowd. We're here to pick a fight with this movie, because this movie is 90 pounds of shit in a 20-pound bag.
It is an interesting concoction.
And, like, I guess, I don't know. I don't even know where to start with this, because, like, the first thing you look at when you see The Star is you look at either the poster or the trailer or whatever, and you see the cast list for this movie, and it's ridiculous.
It is such a motley crew. Like,
I'm surprised Nikki Sixx isn't in this movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, just to sum it up in one sentence, they got Oprah.
They got Oprah.
Yeah.
It's like the old Bojangles ad campaign, like, all the great shit that we have on our menu, but then the Bow Box, like, it's amazing, but you know what? It holds tea. Like, this movie, it has Oprah.
It's true. No, it's such an interesting range of, like, talent, because there's some really good people in this movie.
And then there's also Delilah, which... Fuck Delilah.
Yeah.
You know, when I saw that name in the credits, I was kind of like, I just didn't register that's who that was. I just kind of thought, oh, that must be like some up and coming pop singer. And then, of course, it hit me. No, wait, it's the soft rock mom on the radio, Delilah.
Yes.
Because of course it is.
I can't stand Delilah.
Good Lord.
I don't know how everyone else feels about her, but I cannot stand Delilah.
It's auditory diabetes.
Kind of, yeah.
Ugh. This cast, so we've...
Okay, yeah. So the main character, the donkey...
is Eddie Murphy.
Is definitely not Eddie Murphy.
I watched the wrong movie.
I cannot remember the actor's name, but it was the guy who played Glenn.
It's Steven Yeun.
Yeah, in Walking Dead.
Yeah, there's Steven Yeun, who's Glenn in Walking Dead. Chuck from Chuck is in this movie. Gina Rodriguez, who's Jane the Virgin, is in this movie.
That's some fun metacasting there.
Yeah, she played Mary the Virgin. Yeah.
Keegan-Michael Key is Dave the Dove. Then you just run down all these other people, like the Joel Osteen, fuck that guy, played one of the Three Wise Men, Phil Morris, and Fred Tescor. Anyway, it's that one voice actor who's been in a lot of shit who isn't Frank Welker. He is in here, and then also Phil Morris, who is Jackie Childs from Seinfeld.
Okay. Yeah, and then their three camels are played by Oprah and Tyler Perry and Tracy Morgan. One of these things is not like the others.
What the fuck?
Then yeah, also Kelly Clarkson, Patricia Heaton, Christian Chenoweth, Anthony Anderson, A.D. Bryant, Chris Christopherson, Christopher Plummer, Ving Rhames, Gabriel Iglesias, Mariah Carey. All show up as well.
Yes.
What the fuck is this movie?
If you ever wanted to see a movie where Mariah Carey played a chicken, this is the film for you.
Yes.
Some people must have owed some fucking mortgage payments.
Yeah, like, this movie is an unholy alliance of, like, some extremely, like, religion-based companies.
Okay, yeah.
And then also Jim Henson.
Who are real into it. And also, like, some legit, like, production companies. So it's got, like, good production value. And a range of, like, talent who are probably, like, super genuinely into the message of this movie and doing it because they love it. To people who are just clearly there for a fucking paycheck.
Right. And I can't begrudge the actors who are either super super down for the message of the movie or for the paycheck, because you know what?
Yeah.
Everybody got to eat and everybody is entitled to, you know, what they believe. And that's
yeah,
fine.
Exactly.
But then you're
it's such a jarring combination though.
Yeah. If you look at the production companies too, Columbia Pictures, Sony Pictures Animation, Jim Henson Company, then it goes down to Franklin Entertainment, Walden Media, Affirm Films. Want to guess why you never heard of those last three?
You've heard of Walden Media, certainly. Like, they've produced everything from Shrek to the Narnia movies to this, apparently. So, Walden is not, like, unknown, but Affirm Films, I know, Affirm Films is, like, the Christian film arm of Sony Pictures.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so this is like, all produced, like, Sony in-house. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like some religious interests, basically.
And then, like John mentioned, the Jim Henson Company, like Brian Henson is an executive producer on this film.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, like some like legit production companies.
Reading the
scriptures, aka Wikipedia, this started out back kind of inspired by Babe about making a talking animal movie,
right?
In 95. With the Jim Henson Company, and then it just kind of kicked around until this happened.
Okay, how have we gotten this far without talking about what the movie's actually about, and also making the obvious connection that this is Manger Babies the movie?
because I'm pretending that this is a real film podcast, and we have to, like, get the honorifics out of the way now. And now that we've done that, Karen, take it away.
Oh my god. Okay.
I just love how the Wikipedia article for this finds reason to mention Elmo and Grouchland.
So this is like an animated movie that follows a donkey named Bo, or Boaz, and his best friend, who is a dove named Dave, played by Keegan-Michael Key. Anyway, they end up in the, they end up hanging out with Mary and Joseph. So this is a Jesus story. Mm-hmm. but from the eyes of a bunch of animals, mainly.
I will give it one point of credit. I figured, going into this just knowing just that, that this was going to be some, like, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead type thing, where it's like, ah, you know, the real story type bullshit.
Yeah.
And it didn't do that. It didn't explicitly say that, which so many things of this matter and this, like, caliber of how much effort and money we're putting into it would do. They would take this the real story of X type tribe, which I don't have time for.
Yeah
it's like the one I always go back to is it's the Three Little Pigs told from the perspective of the wolf who was framed. Yes. It was a frame job, and here's
the
real
story. I was
exactly thinking of that book, The True Story of the Three Little Pigs.
Yeah, I remember that too.
But as far as the story goes, like, this is actually a fairly, like, I'm not gonna say competently written, because we can talk about the jokes and whatnot, but, like, it's a fairly faithful adaptation of, like, the nativity story in the Bible. Like, it's...
Yes, exactly.
Except for a lot of the stuff where the donkey goes cliff diving and stuff like that, like, the actual bullet point plot summary is pretty on point.
Yeah, you know, there's some creative liberties, and it's a little little modernized, I guess.
And they even say that at the end of the film too. Like, there's a title card that comes up that says, like, look, we took creative liberties for the sake of this being a 90-minute film.
Right.
But otherwise we tried to stay true to it, and that's fine. Like,
yeah, but yeah, it's a pretty, like, straight up telling of the birth of Jesus story, starting at the beginning where
there's a fucking title card that says 9 months BC and I want to kill myself.
Yes. Oh fuck. I forgot that. Why did you remind me? Yes.
You know
what? So it says, it's a very cutesy movie in some ways too, but yeah.
No, as soon as the movie started, like, I looked down to start taking notes on my phone. I missed that completely.
Oh no.
From Jump Street. I just missed, like, oh man, I'm so sorry.
You missed a biggie. Yes. So yeah, there was a title card at the very beginning of the movie. This is 9 months BC. You're at the perspective, I think it was the Kristen Chenoweth character first, right? The little not mouse.
Yeah.
Mouse.
Yeah.
Who, like, is hanging out in the house with Mary, the 14-year-old virgin Mary.
Sure. Okay.
If in case anyone forgot that. And the angel shows up, who's just like a fucking ball of light, basically, and tells her that God needs her, and she's gonna carry a baby.
And can I just go ahead and say, yes. That's like the one creative decision in this that I actually really loved, was that they didn't just have a man in wings appear in the room and tell her this thing. It's just this, like, incorporeal light that's sort of shimmering around the room. It's very like it's one of those things that I like when religious sort of films take liberties with the way we understand these sort of fantastical beings. Like, we don't understand or know what these things look like because, you know, no one's really truly ever seen one that we know of, but so to show it as like that kind of a shimmering light, it's a really cool trick. Like, it reminds me of the rock monsters in Darren Aronofsky's Noah film. Have you guys seen that?
No, I have not.
Okay, so that movie is, you know, it's basically like the big budget disaster movie version of the flood story.
And, yeah, that sounds about right.
And the fallen angels that appear in the movie appear as rock monsters because why not? And the rock monsters are voiced by Nick Nolte, like, basically gargling rocks. And it's...
Holy shit.
It's amazing.
So Nick Nolte?
Yes, basically it's Nick Nolte. It's such a left turn from things that we typically see in paintings and like, Sunday school... our Sunday school idea of what, like, religious figures look like.
Yeah.
You know? And it turns it into something more...
The angel's not, like, some white dude in, like, a little short, like, toga with wings on. Like...
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
Also, to, again, give this movie credit for something, all of these characters are, let's just say, sufficiently brown enough that you could buy that this is taking place in the Middle East.
Yes,
they
exactly.
They didn't whitewash the entire fucking thing like most American Christians are wont to do.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
That was cool.
So, the star...
Mary's pregnant.
Mary's after that baby again.
It's tough to talk about this movie because, like, basically, you know the story. Like, there's nothing that we're going to say in the next half hour that you don't know already.
Well, what we need to do is talk about the parts that aren't just the straight-up nativity story.
Sure.
Which is, we start out with Bo is a donkey who's working in a mill with another older donkey. And Bo is obsessed with his dove friend Dave. They are obsessed with breaking free and going and joining the royal caravan so they can do something important with their lives.
Yes.
And eventually, Bo does manage to break free with the miller chasing him around town a little bit. And there's a nice little chase scene. That's, I mean, pretty competent for in terms of animation and humor, to be honest. Like, it's not the greatest ever, but it's we've watched worse. We've watched way worse.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. But, like, the impetus for Bo breaking out of the mill is, like, there's a, I guess, a hole in one of the walls of the mill, and he can look out, and he sees, like, the, quote-unquote, the star.
Yes, the namesake of
the
namesake. Movie.
Yeah, the film's namesake star, and he knows that something special is going on, and he needs to be a part of it.
Yeah, but he and Dave are more directly obsessed with getting involved with the royal caravan, because they think that that's the important thing going on.
Yes.
Some of the other characters are more clued into the actual, like, Jesus-y side of things, like the camels definitely are, but for the start, when we're dealing with Bo and Dave, they are intensely interested in this caravan. Bo ends up, after a nice chase around town, hurting his leg and ending up in Mary and Joseph's house.
This is also the same day. This is 6 months after the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
There was another title card that said 6 months later. And this is apparently the day of their, like, wedding.
Yes.
And Mary has been away from Joseph for a little while, and he doesn't know that she's pregnant. And so she's, like, hiding it under, like, baggy clothes and shit. Anyway, just to set the scene, that is this day, and they're, like, cleaning up their the courtyard of, like, their fucking house.
Yeah, so Bo essentially moves in with him for a while his leg heals, and eventually the three wise men show up. They go to talk to the king, Herod.
Yes.
Yes.
Because they have been told that there is the star is showing them that there's going to be a new king.
Yeah, there's a prophecy that the star is leading them toward the new king.
Which I had originally thought, like, okay, they're making this part up, but then no, I went back and looked. No, this is part of the story. They go to Herod first,
and Herod's response is to basically send his unnamed hunter and his two dogs, played by Ving Rhames and Gabriel Iglesias, to, like, hey, why don't you go kill this new king for me? I don't like competition.
Yeah,
And at the same time, he brings up a little bit of the census because he's talking about the emperor's florid language, which I think is a pretty good line, especially from a movie this religious.
Yeah.
To basically make fun of the Bible's writing.
Right. Well, it's probably making fun of more of the King James version of the Bible, because that's the ridiculous one that most people think of.
That's true.
That's the begats and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have, so the moving parts we have is we have, of course, Joseph and Mary going back to Bethlehem for the census. While at the same time, this hunter is looking for the new king, which he doesn't know really what he's looking for. He finds out from the dog. The hunter can apparently talk to dogs. For the most part, anybody in the movie hears the talking animals as just animals making animal noises.
Yeah, like there are points when Bo is trying to, like, warn his humans of things, and it'll show him, like, he thinks he's, like, yelling at them, like, saying words, and then it cuts away to, like, a different view, and it just shows him, like, braying at them.
Yeah, it's
like a donkey.
It's an okay little comedy beat. I mean, but they do it a lot.
As far as I can tell, the hunter who does never speaks can actually speak dog. Because
I think the dogs can speak to the other animals, and so the dogs are basically leading him. So, like, he trusts that the dogs, like, trust their instincts, so he's basically following wherever they go.
Yeah, I think that's true.
The dogs find out from the little Christian Chenoweth mouse chinchilla thing.
It started with a J. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, Jabroni. Let's just go with that.
It's a pygmy jerboa.
Jerboa, that's it. Yes, thank you.
They find out from that Mary is pregnant, and that everyone is very all excited about that for various reasons. So he starts hunting them down. At the same time, Bo and Dave are first get left behind, but then are chasing after Joseph and Mary. and they meet a sheep named Ruth, voiced by Adie Bryant.
Oh, I would like to point out at this point, this the sheep named Ruth and the donkey named Boaz coming together as a like a united front in this movie was a nod to an earlier biblical story.
Yep, yeah. I was going to say that this movie apparently decided it needed its version of Dory from Finding Nemo, so that's why Ruth is in the film.
Oh, well. Yeah. Yeah, they did this a lot, though, where they threw in, like, little, like biblical references and shit.
Yeah, like, there's a scene where Zechariah's wife complains about she liked him better when he couldn't talk, which is a reference to, apparently, what was it, Joseph's dad, Zechariah, was struck dumb because he doubted the prophecy, pretty much. Was that what it was?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. We should probably, like, take a moment here and say that we've all been raised, like, moderately religiously.
Well, not me, not at all, no.
Well, you weren't. I was raised very religiously, so this is all, like, super familiar ground for me.
Like, I was brought up Southern Baptist, so...
Yes, yeah, I was as well, but I am also not any longer, so that's why I talk so, like, frankly about it. So if I say some shit, I'm sorry.
Right, like, I'm trying not to swear, but I've given up... trying to convince you guys, so
this is a Karen episode.
Yeah. This is the Karen episode. Yeah. Let Karen have this.
I'm going to swear so much, you guys.
Oh goodness! All right,
we determined that when we had some sort of complaint about swearing, we determined, oh no, the problem is Karen. That's the swearing issue we have. It's Karen.
That's why I'm only on one episode every 2 months.
We build up a swearing quota.
Exactly.
Every quarter, and then we bring on Karen to just blow right through it in one episode.
It's a great arrangement for me.
So yeah, there's some just some very save the cat formulaic like plot developments of oh they're mad at each other now they're not mad at each other they're mad at each other again for something else all is lost but wait
yeah it's a lot of that and a lot of characters looking at the star and being disillusioned and then looking at the star and then having their faith renewed and resolved and returning on the journey
to actually elaborate a tiny bit on that they have a little bit of chase scenes with the hunter. They eventually make it to Bethlehem and Bo gets captured by the miller he escaped from the beginning again.
Yeah.
And thrown into a barn where there's Anthony Anderson, Kelly Clarkson, and Patricia Heaton, I think.
Yes.
Are animals in there, and they let him out, and he eventually finds Joseph and Mary, leads them to the manger.
Yeah, because they're... So, in case you don't know the Bible story, there's a census. Joseph and Mary is, like, 9 months fucking pregnant with Jesus at this point. There's a census. They have to travel to their, like, homeland, one of their homelands, which is Bethlehem. So they go there. She's heavily pregnant. They get there. Like, the place is fucking packed.
And
none of the inns have any room in them. And so they end up having to find a stable to stay in so she can give birth.
But then this movie, invents reasons for all of that. Like, okay, so all of the things that they had packed up with them were tied to Bo, including the money that they were going to spend for a place for the night. And then Bo gets captured by the miller and taken off, so they suddenly don't have any money. Therefore, that's why they're being shut out of every place in town. Not because it's crowded, because they don't have any money.
Yeah.
And so the last place that shuts them out, Joseph decides, well, Mary decides, like, the baby's coming now, and we have to sit down. So he, like, puts his thing on the curb, and she sits down on the curb.
They're basically like, yeah, she's like, we're just gonna fucking do this right here on the doorstep.
Yeah, we're doing this right here. And then Bo shows up and leads them to the stable, and Joseph looks at it and goes, no, we're not doing this right here. And I'm like, dude, you were about to make her have birth on the street. Like, just let her have this.
I like how it looked like he, like, laid his coat down for her to sit on, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just a very funny detail to me.
Chivalrous
but
to the end.
They end up in the stable where these other animals have been waiting for a while because of the star. The star conveniently shone right into a hole in the top of the stable and down onto a manger, which is a like an animal feeding trough.
Sure, yeah. I mean, when you're dealing with this story, you have to kind of take. I caught myself. I almost said you have to take a lot of this on faith.
I think you actually did that already once in this episode, and no one acknowledged it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's... So many of these turns of phrase are just, like, ingrained, and I can't stop myself. But
this,
like,
is just a fucking minefield.
It really is, and we're just, like, hitting them left and right. Poop here, poop there. But no, like, you have to take so much of this stuff as just granted. Like, okay, sure. Like, the light from the star will shine. Okay, why? That's fine. Yeah. I mean, the star leads the wise men to the stable. It leads the shepherds to the stable. Like, okay, I'm going to allow that.
So then, while all of the humans are screwing around with the baby, all the animals are there, all teamed up to fight off the hunter, and they don't kill the hunter. The hunter kills himself.
Oh yeah,
that's right.
I meant to say something about this. That was extremely dark for this movie.
Yeah.
Just to, like, paint a mind picture here.
Weave me a story with your words.
Yes. So the hunter has his two dogs. He's shown up in Bethlehem and is like, he is on Mary's trail, and so
he's basically Kratos too.
Yes, yeah. Bo and the other animals are like on a mission to stop them.
Yeah, and we forgot to mention Ruth has separated from her flock because they don't believe the star is anything important.
Yeah, and they all think she's like nuts.
And they show up again. They show up later because apparently they have converted. And I think this is an incredibly on the nose metaphor, and I'm going to blame Joel Osteen for it.
Yes. But anyway, so yeah, all these animals are banding together to try to keep the hunter from attacking Mary, because he's gonna try to kill Mary and her baby, basically.
Right.
So anyway, he finds them at the stable finally, and the animals are standing up to him, and the sheep happen, and then what, he ends up dangling on a cliff. And Bo, being a good donkey, is going to try to help him and his dogs, who are, like, hanging, you know, he's hanging by his fingers.
Well, he's just trying to help the dogs. I don't think he really cares about the hunter.
Well, I think he doesn't want to kill anybody. So he's trying to help the dogs, but the hunter decides that he's just going to drop the dogs and, like, help himself up.
Right.
So what happens is Bo catches the dogs, the cliff crumbles, and the hunter falls to his death, after which there is a shot of just an empty helmet, like, rolling into the center of the, like, screen.
It's like the film school 101 of when you want to let an audience know that a character has been killed, you will let whatever piece of headgear they were wearing, like, very gingerly fall to the ground in a very, like, artistic shot to imply death. Like,
exactly,
we couldn't just, like, show him fall. No, that's too much. Let's just show the hat fall.
It was really dark for, like, this kind of movie too. And it just seemed like very heavy. Like, it was a very heavy, like, moral lesson.
Yeah,
basically. Which I felt like there was a lot of in this. But anyway, yeah. So Jesus is finally safe, and the two dogs are so grateful. That Bo saved their lives.
So they convert to Christianity.
And yes, and they feel bad and they repent, and then they become good dogs.
They are, like, one step away from having Ving Rhames, like, enter the scene and just go, "I'm sorry."
Pretty much, yeah.
But I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah,
because, even that would have been a step too far. Like, there's so many places in this movie where it's like they could have gone one step too cutesy. And they don't. But then at the very end of the movie, they go, like, 10 steps too cutesy, and I just wanted to break something.
Yes.
Yeah, like, all of the animals bowing, just kind of, like, it was just like, oh yeah, I saw when they did that in Lion King, and I hated it then too. Yeah.
That's not even the moment I'm talking about. The moment I'm talking about is at the very... Okay, so all throughout this film, the three camels have been trying to guess where it is they're going and why.
Yes. So the three camels are the mounts of the three wise men.
Right. And one of them thinks they're going because the wise men have gifts. So one of them thinks they're going to a birthday party. The other one has heard tell of what's going on. Oh, we're going to see a newborn baby. And then the third one, Oprah, is like, no, we're going to see the newborn Messiah. And they think she's crazy.
Yeah. Tracy Morgan thinks it's a baby shower, I believe.
Baby shower. That's it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It just reminded me of, the part I hated at the very end, which I was blocking out of my mind.
But, yeah, so then at the very end, after everything has been said and done, Oprah has to like end the film on this like giant gaudy ass button, and it's Oprah saying, you know, people will remember this day for thousands and thousands of years and will celebrate it on this night every year. Like, and then once again, the camels think she's crazy.
Yes.
And then us watching it at home go, that's so ironic because we just celebrated Christmas 2 months ago. 3 months ago, excuse me.
Yeah. Oh, God. I groaned so many times watching this movie.
I kept thinking of The Critic. And when Duke convinced the Phillips machine to make movie endings less sad, and the one for Pride of the Yankees. Do you remember?
I don't.
They invent Lou Gehrig's oil to heal him, and one of the last scenes is a newsie going extra extra Lou Gehrig cured Bill Cosby bored, and Bill Cosby goes, thanks to this oil I'll live to see his bland and offensive comedy.
Jesus Christ.
That's, I don't know how related it is. That's all I could think of when she was doing this very on the nose, like I think this will happen in the future. Literally describe present day shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, Jesus is born, animals bow, Oprah delivers her fucking line, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, in the credits there's a couple scenes. Joseph and Mary buy the donkey from the miller. And then there's a couple scenes of Jesus being like a toddler and everything.
Yeah.
None of Jesus like, dying. Get to that credits.
These are like, yeah, like little like, just still images of like, you know, the after, I guess, the epilogue of this story. But I was watching it going like, there's no way they're going to go all the way with this. And for real and for true, they did not. But I really felt like there's no way they're going to go
I had the thought as well. I was like, they're just going to end with like a fucking drawing of a cross like on a hill silhouetted.
I thought the same thing. Like either they're not going to do this or they're going to go all the way with it. And if they go all the way with it, it's going to be really tasteful and like subtle. But they didn't even do that.
Yes. I thought the exact same thing.
Because like because you know in the back of their minds, that's kind of where all of this is going.
Exactly.
And my other thought was they could make The Star 2, and it's
Jesus's early years.
No, because the next part of the Nativity story is them fleeing to Egypt because Herod orders the killing of the innocents.
It's true.
Which, you know, is considerably dark for what is supposed to be a children's film.
Did you notice that this was actually rated PG?
No, I didn't. I just assumed.
It was.
The only thing I can think of is because of the hunter dying. That's probably what pushed it over the edge.
Yeah, that must have been like too dark for a G movie.
Or maybe the scene where the dove, voiced by Key, says he's going to go poop on somebody.
He does say number two a lot.
He makes poop jokes, yeah. That's kind of his thing.
Yeah, that's my thing too. It's cool. yep. Yeah, so this movie made me really fucking mad. I got super mad a lot for a few reasons. One of which is that it's extremely, like, it just bounces you back and forth between some stuff actually being genuinely kind of funny or, like, something being like, oh, that's actually like, kind of cool, and then it just like it smacks you in the face with like some super heavy-handed like moralizing shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like it bounces like between, let's say, between Pixar and VeggieTales. It keeps bouncing back and forth between those two.
Yes, and it was ridiculous. Like, it just made me so mad because, like, on one hand, I wanted to like it because of the good parts, and then that just all went out the window.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it made me mad because of my upbringing I mentioned earlier. This is probably something that I would have legit been into when I was a kid.
Part of the problem with this movie, I think, is that like so many of these kinds of movies always sort of resort to just, I guess, pardon the expression, preaching to the choir. Because like this movie's not going to convert any children or anybody for that matter, but this movie like knows exactly who it's pitching itself to. And
this movie exists for grandmas to buy, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, that just, you know, that sounds really cynical, but it really is. Like, they're just.
But you know, that's not to say that like this kind of a movie about, you know, the nativity story can't be done well, or any biblical story for that matter can't be done well. I mean, the DreamWorks Prince of Egypt movie is a great movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it can
also had a Mariah Carey song in it.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be done. It's just, it has to, it depends on what the studio wants to put in there and like what they think will sell. And apparently what they think will sell is Nestor the Long-Eared Donkey with a bunch of pentatonic songs in it.
Fucking yeah, like, proselytizing.
You want to see who's the, go over the soundtrack real quick. There's the Mariah Carey song, of course.
Oh, yeah, by the way, so yeah, this whole soundtrack is like scored almost entirely with Christmas hymns of one maker.
Yes.
Yeah.
But like pop music covers of them.
Yeah, like very very Christian youth group type artists.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're going to go through the lists, and you two just tell me the ones you've heard of. Kelsey Ballerini.
I have not.
Kirk Franklin.
Yes.
Nope.
Fifth Harmony.
No, I don't know them.
A Great Big World.
That sounds kind of familiar.
Zara Larsson.
Yes.
Yolanda Adams.
Yes.
Saving Forever.
No.
No.
Jesse James Decker.
No.
No.
Casting Crowns.
Yes.
No.
Jake Owen.
No.
Maybe.
I know who Jake Owen is. It's a country music guy.
Okay.
And Pentatonix.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is like... And you've not even been in this for, like, a decent amount of time, so this is like playing the hits circa, like, 1997, basically.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's the difference then, I guess, because, like, I never got into sort of the Christian music side of things when I was a kid, and not for lack of trying on certain people's parts, but, like, it's just, that never clicked for me, so a lot of those names, I'm just like, okay, fine, sure.
Yeah, I was heavy in it for a bit. I was brought up like super heavy in it. So,
like Fifth Harmony, I'm familiar with. They're a pop group,
right?
You know,
yeah. Some of those are definitely pop, like just pop artists. Yeah, but there are like, also a lot of like Christian music artists. But,
the film opens on an a cappella version of Carol the Bells, and I immediately just heard that and just thought, this is not Pentatonix, is it? And then, sure enough, it's Pentatonix, because nobody does a cappella anything unless it's Pentatonix, because that's what sells records.
Yes.
I think the AV Club's review is kind of a good summary of kind of what we're going on in this.
Yeah.
Is, even the kid-friendliest, Sunday-schooliest kind of religious art can't spring from religion alone. It needs artistry, too. Otherwise, you end up with a generic product aimed at a market segment who will buy anything as long as it seems sufficiently churchy.
That's a really good description. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. They had, like, the companies and the talent in on this to do a real thing, but then they just let it just swing over into fucking, like, preaching land a lot. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there was some actual, like, talent behind this, both voice-wise and, like, animation-wise. The animation's not the best, but also nowhere near the worst. I mean, I've seen worse animated, like, non-religious things. And
yeah.
And I usually associate, like, religious things with being very poor quality because they can get away with it because they know, oh, you know, someone's church grandma's going to buy this anyway, so who cares if we make it good or not, you know?
Yeah. Someone's church grandma.
Yeah. you got regular grandma, you got church grandma.
I don't want to know. So, but yeah, like, the production value is actually still really good for, like, the kind of thing this movie ultimately is. So I think that's just why it makes me so mad.
I mean, again, to look at VeggieTales.
Yes.
Is VeggieTales well animated?
No.
It gets there, eventually. Yeah. But if you watch, like, because I've seen way too much of the VeggieTales intro.
Yes.
Because of certain specific reasons.
Yeah.
And the first, like, versions of it, it is absolute, like, it is, like, really 3D levels of animation.
Yeah, yeah. It is very bad.
And, but it got popular off of that because it was just like, it's technically a cartoon and it mentions Jesus, so we'll buy all of it for the kids.
Yeah, so it got popular and it got better.
And that's the thing, too, like, as sort of like Christian entertainment has become more mainstream, I kind of shudder to say that, but it's true. Like, more money gets infused in it, and the studios become bigger, and they can start wrangling talent like Ving Rhames and Patricia Heaton and these all these people who are like huge,
yes,
like, not huge talent, but big enough talent that like they're yeah, names that most people know.
And I mean, yeah, I would say getting Oprah Winfrey is a pretty big fucking guess.
Yeah, this is like the fourth voice acting role Oprah's ever done.
Right. Yeah.
And on the list of her like actual movie roles, it's probably, I don't think it's more than a dozen, is it?
Yeah.
No.
One of which is The Fucking Color Purple. So,
I mean,
like,
yeah,
like a legit ass movie.
The Color Purple, yeah, a legit ass movie.
Yeah.
Maybe not for everybody involved, but I think for a lot of the people involved in this, it might be more of a, they're more in it for the side of making a nativity movie than they are for the animated paycheck, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I would imagine that's why Oprah's there. Oprah's not there for a fucking paycheck.
Yeah, Oprah is not there for the money. She doesn't need it. Like, she's there because this speaks to her, I think.
So I'm looking at Oprah's, So I'm looking at Oprah's credits on Wikipedia, and her most recent credit is for a movie called Crow, the Legend. And for a brief moment of joy, I thought Oprah starred in a remake of The Crow. And honestly,
I knew that's where you were going with that.
I would pay so much money to watch Oprah in The Crow.
Holy shit.
Just so, like, she can just, like, hunt down goons on a city street and tell them about the secret before she stabs them to death.
Wait, let's figure this out. How would this movie go?
Okay, so obviously Dr. Phil plays the Ernie Hudson character. He's the cop who discovers that Oprah Winfrey has been brought back from the dead to kill the people that killed her.
But first she's going to give them all a free car.
Yes. And the yes, you're going to get a free car right in your face. Okay, so the villain has to be, oh boy, the villain in this Oprah Winfrey starring remake of The Crow has to be Maury Povich. And Maury Povich
shit,
originally killed Oprah, and who is her assistant on the show? I forget.
Oh, I have no idea. I don't watch Oprah.
Okay, well, killed Oprah and her assistants and took over because he wants to be the reigning TV star, right? So then a year later, The Crow resurrects Oprah Winfrey to kill Maury Povich and all of the people that work for Maury Povich. And Dr. Phil is there to help her.
What if instead of Maury Povich, it's just straight up like Jerry Springer? Just go...
The Crow is, no, the Crow is Jerry Springer.
Oh, okay.
Jerry Springer voices The Crow.
Perfect.
Because Jerry Springer, if nothing else, is the harbinger of chaos and death.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, news to me that The Crow City of Angels is not the Meg Ryan Nick Cage movie.
No.
No, that's just City of Angels, City of Angels.
Yes. News to me.
They had to recast Brandon Lee for City of Angels with Nicolas Cage because Brandon Lee died. That's how that goes, right?
What a fucking casting decision right there. They are exactly the same. Did you see this shit going around recently that was, what was it, Nicolas Cage's face on David Schwimmer and Friends?
Yeah.
Oh my god, no.
It looks exactly the same.
Yeah, it's like Ross looks more Ross than Ross.
Yikes. My favorite recent Cage...
I mean, The Crow is a comic book movie, so I wouldn't put it past Nick Cage to want to be in it, except all he cares about is Ghost Rider and Superman.
You know what? That's probably exactly why he was in City of Angels. He heard about The Crow City of Angels and was like, sign me up, and then all of a sudden he was accidentally in a Meg Ryan rom-com.
And he's just like, oh, well, I just bought this castle anyway, might as well do it while I'm here.
Wait, was it a rom-com? I thought it was like a serious movie.
Yeah, I misspoke. It was a serious movie. It's a Meg Ryan like romance where he's an angel and she's not.
Okay, all I knew about it was the fucking Goo Goo Dolls song.
That's all you Iris. Need to know, really.
Yeah, so, and I remember the music video for that had a bunch of, like, scenes, because you remember when they used to do that with music videos? It would be like just a bunch of scenes from whatever movie that it came out in, that it was in.
Yeah, Joe does a podcast about this now.
Yes, oh, really? I do. Yeah, Karen, I know all about it. I've been talking about The Crow for like a month straight.
I'm sorry, I have not been listening to podcasts at all.
Follow us on Twitter at OST Party for more information about my horrible movie soundtrack podcast. It's a lot of fun.
But yeah, so that's all I knew about that movie, and I thought that it was something like super serious.
It is. I can tell you the ending of City of Angels right now if you want.
Sure.
Okay, so Nicolas Cage is an angel, and Meg Ryan is a human, and the angel falls in love with the human. And he decides he's going to give up being an angel and become a human again so that they can be together. And then she gets hit by a bus.
Oh, shit.
I am not kidding. That's the movie.
So it's like a fucking O. Henry story.
It's an O. Henry story. Exactly. It's like if O. Henry tried to write a Twilight Zone episode.
All right.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
We have like wandered like 30 miles afield of where the rails used to be on this podcast.
I think that's fine.
But yeah,
isn't Meet Joe Black about like an angel who gets hit by a bus as well? Is that what I'm thinking of?
I thought Meet Joe Black
was about like
Brad Pitt is like an angel or something. No, Brad Pitt gets hit by a bus.
Brad Pitt, doesn't he play like the Grim Reaper or something?
He gets hit by a bus is the important thing.
Yeah, I thought it was
about like a gorilla or something.
No, it's Mighty Joe Young. What the fuck?
So wait, in Mighty Joe Young, Brad Pitt plays the gorilla, right? And Charlize Theron like wants to fuck it?
Yes.
Is that how that movie goes? I don't remember. The 90s were weird.
And also, the gorilla kills someone's dad because we're talking about Kitty Pig now.
Of course.
Oh my god.
Hey, I have a question that I wanted to ask to bring this back to the movie at hand. Were there gorillas in the Nativity?
Not that I know of.
Because that would have made this movie more interesting.
I don't think that, like, the, like, Middle East, like, Mediterranean area is like a gorilla habitat.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the Roman Empire had many tentacles all over the world. They could have gotten their hands on some gorillas, but then
like you think that they just like imported them.
But then I guess then I guess the question is, why would they take a gorilla to Bethlehem? Like, what use would they have for a gorilla?
Exactly.
And I guess they don't, but. Do you know there's got to be one
It's like a traveling like zoo or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Like a circus.
Or there's that one guy who's just like really into having exotic pets.
I'm just picturing an ox cart with a crate on the back of it that just says warning gorilla on the side of the crate. That's all in my head right now.
That's
Jesus Christ.
Who would?
Well, it's gotta have like some holes in it so it can breathe.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean we're not monsters here. Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay. My next question. As I was writing this question, the movie answered the question. Does God answer animal prayers?
I guess so.
I mean, in the movie, I guess he does.
It with some annoying animals.
But okay, most animals. What are they gonna pray for? And the answer is food.
Yes.
And I don't think God is in the business of giving most dogs, you know, spare ribs in his free time. Like, that's a huge waste of resources, and also spare ribs. But,
sounds delicious.
It really does. I gotta get to Outback tonight.
Yeah.
but, you know, no, there's a scene in the end of the movie where Bo asks, you know, he prays to God for guidance, and then that kind of pushes him toward, you know, the final resolution of the film. And
right. It
made me wonder, you know, I can't say I've ever seen a movie or a special where an animal prayed. This is a first for me.
I don't know that I've seen that either. Like, not in a serious way anyway.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen, like, people,
I mean,
in cartoons
praying.
But
the only thing I can think
joke.
Of is, does all dogs go to heaven kind of tread this path at all?
That's, you know what, that's probably the right answer, I guess. And it's been too long since I've seen All Dogs to really make a a qualified answer to the question.
I haven't seen that since I was, like, very little.
I have absolutely no plans on ever watching that again.
Yeah, isn't it kind of a weird movie for kids?
Isn't it Don Bluth, which says enough?
Yeah, that's right.
If you ever want to see an animated movie where Burt Reynolds is the star, there's All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Rest in peace, Burt Reynolds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's the star, everybody. The last thing I guess I'll say is that I would really love to see another... Okay, I'm not sure how to set this up, so I'll just straight up say it.
Just do it.
I want to see a prequel to The Life of Brian told exactly like this. Like, if anyone out there knows Seth Rogen, can someone just, like, please ask him to hire a bunch of unpaid animators to make this happen? Like, an animated, like, prequel to The Life of Brian, where some random jackass out in the middle of the desert wanders into the wrong stable at the wrong time. Like, I'll chip...
A literal jackass.
A literal jackass. Like, I'll chip in to, like, pay for the animators that Seth Rogen's obviously not going to pay to make this movie. But this is a movie that definitely needs to exist. Somebody out there knows one of the Pythons. Like, I think we can make this happen.
Yes. He is a very naughty dog.
Wait. Naughty Dog? You want this to be a video game? I mean, that's One Direction, I guess.
I mean, honestly, yeah, that's a good question. What is Terry Gilliam doing lately, anyway?
What if you got Terry Gilliam together with Naughty Dog and made a Terry Gilliam-esque, like, video game?
A Terry Gilliam-esque video game where the plot is basically fuck video games?
It would be, like, Uncharted slash, like, Terry Gilliam.
I'm just picturing Uncharted, except now all of, like, the environmental obstacles are just giant cartoon feet trying to stop on.
All the water is, like, the, like, cutouts, like, the multi-layered, like, cutouts moving around and shit.
Yeah, and, like, all the fetch quests are, like, 10 steps too complicated, because that's what Terry Gilliam loves to do. It's just, everything needs to be complicated for no reason.
Everything's just fucking weird and fantastical, and there's just, like, a bunch of, like, weird-ass animation.
Rest assured, something will go wrong in the production of that game, because it always does.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Yeah, we have tired of talking about the star, and we're talking about literally anything else.
I did not realize that The Man Who Killed Don Quixote actually got released. Wow.
Yeah, but only just barely. Like, I don't know what else there is for us, you know? Like, Terry Gilliam finally made his Don Quixote movie. Guns N' Roses made Chinese Democracy. Duke Nukem Forever came out. What's left?
Half-Life 3.
Half-Life 3. Yeah. There it is.
Like, Half-Life 3 and someone finding, like, an original cut of Magnificent Ambersons. That's basically all that's left for Wonder in the World.
J.D. Salinger's next book. That's pretty much it. We're ready for the apocalypse, everybody. Like, there's nothing left. There's no entertainment left to release.
I mean, we're almost there, so it works out.
You know what I would love to see? Someone, like, ties J.J. Abrams to a chair, like, Ludovico technique style, and makes him watch as they open up that stupid fucking box from his grandpa.
What's supposed to be in it?
The entire point of J.J. Abrams' existence is that he doesn't know. Like, his grandpa gave him a box and told him to open it when he's ready or some shit like that, and he's refused to ever open it because I think his idea is that nothing in the box could ever be as fun as the wonder of wondering what's in the box.
Good lord.
And that drives all of his filmmaking of...
So basically his entire life is just as, like, a viewer of Pulp Fiction, just, like, wondering what's in the fucking briefcase.
Well...
He just doesn't know.
The problem with J.J. Abrams is J.J. Abrams thinks the question of what's in the briefcase is really fucking important. Like, it's very important to keep asking that question and never answering it.
Yes.
Instead of just realizing that, you know what, it actually doesn't really matter because the briefcase is just there to move the plot along.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that the reason Super 8 is a dumb piece of shit movie with no point is because J.J. Abrams hated his inheritance?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm done with everything. Like, just fuck this. Like, forget it.
Like, let's talk about Star Wars for a second.
No. We're coming for you, J.J. Abrams.
Because it's why you have all of these, like, plot points that Episode 7 brought up that never really went anywhere. It's because J.J. Abrams was never intending for them to go anywhere.
Yep.
Like, I think if Abrams had his way with all three movies, you would never know a single thing about Rey's parentage. Like, he'd keep bringing it up too. Like, he'd keep bringing it up and never resolving it, bringing it up and never resolving it. which is why it was pretty funny that Rian Johnson just stepped in and just took a shit.
So is J.J. Abrams just like the cinematic version of edging?
Yes.
Well, you know, I mean, according to, if you follow Star Wars logic, the fact that we don't know who Rey's parents are means that Rey's full name is Rey Mysterio Jr.
Yes.
Yes. Got it.
That's,
one.
That's all it is. That's all it could possibly
that's
be.
That's all, folks.
Da, 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 da. Hey, it's time for the crankometer. We haven't done that yet.
Oh, fuck. Oh, I'm not prepared for this.
We're not done talking about the star yet, even though we clearly are.
I was done talking about it before we started.
So yeah, the crankometer is our patented scale of an XY axis, which is how we rate these movies, because we're a bunch of idiots, and that's the only way we've come up with to score these movies. The X axis is the Christmas quotient, how Christmassy a film is. The Y axis is the quality quotient, how good the film is. So, John and Karen, how Christmassy is the star?
Okay.
This is a tough question.
This is weird. It's questionable because they play like pop covers, like very poppy covers of a lot of traditional Christmas songs.
True.
But I think it is accurate to sort of the historical aspect, mm-hmm. in that it's like set in the Middle East. It's not like winter in the United States, basically. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it doesn't have the feel of like what modern Christmas is, so it's not really Christmassy like that. Although religiously, it is like the epitome of Christmassy.
Right. I mean, there, you can't get more Christmassy than the Nativity story.
Yes, but you can't get more Christmassy than the literal birth of Christ.
Right. So I feel like anything less than a 5 is going to be a sacrilegious call on our part.
I mean, but I feel like it's also evened out by, like, not feeling like the modern Christmas, which is kind of what I feel like our Christmas axis really measures. Like how right. much does it feel like Christmas to us?
That's true. And as far as that goes, like, the only tick on that scale that I can give it is that whenever the royal caravan passes by, all we hear are sleigh bells for some reason.
Oh, yeah. And that's apparently Santa Claus was there before Jesus.
Hey, there you go. Which, I don't know how you feel about that, but I feel like that gives it at least one point of Christmas. Should we give this a 6 on our Christmas scale?
Well, see, I was gonna just have those things, like, both balance it out, so it's just at an even 0. Of neither Christmassy nor not, because it's just, like, so far in both directions.
It's pre-Christmassy, so necessarily 0. Yes, it takes place in 0.
Yeah, it's true.
You're 0, so it gets a 0.
It's before Christmas. There was literally no Christmas.
So I'm going to here's where my judgment's going to fall.
Okay.
The sleigh bells thing is going to give it 1 point. I want to give this a 1 for sleigh bells.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Like, I get
Christmassy. It evens out, but there are sleigh bells, so 1 point.
Well, do you want to take a point away from? Away for Oprah's prediction, maybe?
Ooh. Yeah, you know, I really do. I really do.
Okay, so it's a 0.
It's a perfect 0. Oh boy, are we... Anybody who made it this far in the podcast is probably totally cool with that. Like, people who are mad about this episode have logged off long, like an hour ago.
Yeah. I have to say, I'm even madder now at J.J. Abrams than I was about 5 minutes ago.
Oh yeah?
Because I got my story on his mystery box bullshit a little wrong. This was not something his grandpa did. This was self-inflicted. He went to a magic shop when he was a kid and bought a mystery box and refuses to open it.
That's Holy even, shit! That is even worse.
Yes. Yeah, that is just, like, way more stupid.
Like,
fuck you, J.J. Abrams.
Fucking J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams, come on, dude. Alright. So, the Y-axis. How good is the star?
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, that guy's in here.
Yeah, forget about him.
The other J-Man.
I don't know, because again, it like rubber bands between like having some legit like funny and like cool directions taken with stuff, and then just being like real fucking ham-fisted and just like real bad.
Yeah, I'm kind of conflicted here, because like on the one hand, I honestly didn't hate most of it.
Yeah.
But I was never truly entertained by any of it.
I was I was equal parts, like, horrified by parts of it and, like, entertained by parts of it. So, again, like, I feel like it just kind of balances out to a zero.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree. Like, the animation's not... this is not the worst, like, animation I've seen, but because it's by, like, a real legit sort of movie studio, you kind of expect it to be a little bit better than it is.
Yeah.
It's very like serviceable animation. Like,
yeah,
it's made competently, but without too much like artistic flair to it. It's not as ugly as the Boss Baby. I'll give it that.
Like, there are some good jokes in it that I wonder if maybe some stuff was like ad-libbed by some of the actors that they got on board, because they had like some legitimately good people in it.
Yeah.
But like otherwise the writing was like pretty like kind of bad.
I could definitely see Tracy Morgan, Keegan, and Adi Bryant especially being given room to just walk with the script.
Yeah,
much.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's who I was thinking of specifically.
And then as far as like actual like real legitimate performances go, once again, I'm gonna give 1 point because Zachary Levi, who played Joseph, plays him like he's Jerry Seinfeld. And I think that's funny.
It is kind of true.
Because he's always walking around going like, the Messiah? What about, you know, what's that all about?
What's up with the Messiah?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
But again,
I still feel like...
I want to give it a 0-0.
Perfectly carbon neutral kind of film.
Yeah. I think that the shitty... and the great kind of balance each other against.
Yeah, because
so
like
zero.
From all you want to say about what's good with it, Joel Osteen is given a role in it, and so it,
and Delilah,
yeah,
but yeah,
Delilah is just more annoying on a personal level. Joel Osteen is like offensive, though.
Yeah, he is. He really true. Sucks. That's like true. just to be like completely serious for a second, dude sucks. Yeah. Extremely hardcore.
So yeah, I think...
Yeah, so yeah, 0-0.
I think we're well within our rights to give this a 0-0. Like, it's not actively terrible, but it's also, like, it's just not good enough.
This film is the fucking origin point for the crankometer. Do we have another one of this?
Wait, what?
Another what?
The 0-0?
We've had a 0-0 before, I know we've had.
Okay.
So, yeah, looking back at our past crankometers, this movie, The Star, has exactly the same score as Die Hard 2, which is...
That tells you everything you need to know about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if Christmas rolls around next year, or rather this year, skip this year's Christmas, just forget about it. 2020 Christmas.
It doesn't exist.
Rolls around.
Sorry.
And you get, if you just want the absolute perfect, like, baseline... perfectly carbon neutral Christmas experience, put on Die Hard 2 and then put on The Star, and you're gonna have yourself a perfectly average Christmas.
Wait, are you going to put them on at the same time, like yes. Dark Side of Oz?
Yes.
Well, okay, so Die Hard 2 is longer than The Star by about half an hour, so what you're gonna want to do is you're gonna want to start The Star as soon as John McClane fights the guy in the baggage claim area of Die Hard 2.
Perfect.
And that'll sync. That's
Robert Patrick, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, that'll sync those two up. So once you know, that should be an interesting experience. Actually, now that I think about it.
So since The Star is shorter, then it would play the role of the Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah. So
in this
analogy, you have to start watching The Star once John McClane kills the Terminator. I think
right.
Is what Joe was saying.
Yes. So The Star. So you're going to use The Star for your audio, and then I don't know.
I have a really...
Are you going to have the audio on both of them? Is it going to sync up? It's going to be like that Flaming Lips album.
Yeah, it's going to sync up like when... in the scene in the film where all the sheep... like or the where the angels like appear to the sheep and the shepherds in the fields.
Yes.
That's the moment when John McClane like ejects from the fighter jet up into the sky as the plane explodes.
Oh my god.
Oh man.
Yes.
Actually, there's a way.
Yes, and when the hunter appears, that's the which way's more, the lead in your ash or the shit in your brains.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god. Okay. So I actually have Die Hard 2 up right now on my computer. Uh-huh. At the exact half hour mark is when Al Powell shows up. So when Powell shows up in the film in Die Hard 2, that's when you start the star.
Al is short for Angel, A-L.
I'll allow it.
Oh, nice. I'll allow it as well.
I'll allow it.
So now I'm just imagining a version of like the Star Trek the Motion Picture. When V'ger makes its appearance and they discover that it's actually like Voyager 6 and they just like rub off a bunch of the smudges on the plate and it's like, oh, V'ger means Voyager. Like Al returns to Earth and they clean off his badge and where it just says A-L, they get that smudge out of it. Oh, Al Powell. What have you been up to? I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
So is he the one that told Mary that she was going to be pregnant? He's that angel?
Yeah. Sure, why not?
Ooh. Right.
So what we're saying is the star is a part of the Winslowverse.
Oh, yes. Jesus.
Yes.
That is a...
So this episode's gone some weird places, y'all. Weird and unexpected and... frankly entertaining places as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. It's been a fun one.
That's the star, everybody. So score it 0-0 on your crankometer. You can go down to your nearest Food Lion or Kroger and get yourself a crankometer score sheet. They're right next to the hurricane plots. It's, you know, that season's coming up again, so they should be readily available. I don't know why I say that every episode. That's just the thing that I think of.
But it works.
But yeah, so
you boo.
So that's Christmas Creeps for this week, everybody. So if you have any questions or comments or recommendations for future episodes, you can get those to us at Christmas Creeps on Twitter or email them to us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, even though I haven't really updated those in a while. So use those at your discretion.
I mean, Oprah, if you're mad at us for this, send a plane. We'll talk.
Send us some money.
Oprah Council, please send us some money.
Exactly.
Yeah, yes, this is the time that's going to work. Oh, Lordy. So for Christmas Creeps, I'm Joseph Wade.
I'm Johnny Five, the human robot.
I'm Karen Five.
We made up a sign-off recently, but I forgot what it was already.
Joseph for that sign up again.
Good night, everybody. Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.